Welcome to Wheels Across the West, History and Legacy of the Santa Fe Trail, a production by students at the Kinder Institute on Constitutional Democracy at the University of Missouri, presented by the Missouri Humanities Council. I'm Bobby Lee, your host for this episode, A Religious Highway. During the presidential transition in 2020, incoming President Joe Biden nominated Deb Haaland as Secretary of the Interior. Upon being confirmed by the Senate, Haaland became the first indigenous cabinet member in United States history. This position gave her oversight of the government's role in land management and conservation and the government's Native American policy. In her first year in office, Secretary Haaland announced a major change and the government's policy regarding Indigenous Americans.
Today, I'm announcing and sharing with you all, first, that the department will launch the Federal Indian Boarding School Initiative. At no time in history have the records or documentation of this policy been compiled or analyzed to determine the full scope of its reaches and effects. We must uncover the truth about the loss of human life and the lasting consequences of these schools.
This effort launched a full-scale investigation into the history of boarding schools that seek to anglicize indigenous communities, especially in the American West. These schools were widespread from the 1860s to the 1970s. They tried to disrupt indigenous communities through outlawing their language, customs, and spiritual beliefs. Many of these notorious boarding schools were in the American Southwest, where Native Americans made up a large share of the population. These schools were the latest tools of a conversion and assimilation program that began with the arrival of Spanish Catholic colonialism in the 17th century. The process accelerated in the 19th century, when a large influx of European and Anglo-American Protestants came to the Southwest by taking the Santa Fe Trail. While the Santa Fe Trail started as a commercial highway, it became a spiritual highway that transported people of many different faiths to the American Southwest, where they interacted with one another. This turned the trail in the region into a contested religious space, ultimately leading to tensions and violence. This transformed the Santa Fe Trail from a spiritual highway to a warpath for attacks on indigenous religious practices. In this episode, we'll explore the historical background and the development of the trail as a spiritual highway. Then, we'll turn to how violence and unrest between Native communities and European settlers escalated with the expansion of railroads and homesteads, both of which resulted in the dispossession of Native lands. We'll dive into the post-Indian War era and the assimilationist policies, such as boarding schools, that aimed to destroy indigenous culture. Before we get started, it's important to understand the racial and religious makeup of the regions on the Santa Fe Trail before the arrival of American settlers. Setting out from western Missouri and Kansas beginning in the 1820s, early travelers on the Santa Fe Trail would have encountered numerous tribes and Indian nations. They would have passed through the lands of the Kaw Nation, also known as the Kansa. They might have crossed paths with the Ouenache people, also referred to as the Missouria, namesake of the state of Missouri. Also historically based in what is nowadays Missouri, was the Osage Nation. All of these different Midwestern and Southern Great Plains tribes had vastly different spiritualities from one another, with different rituals and practices. But many of these traditions had a few common themes, such as the general value and reverence of the land and resources. For example, the Osage Nation bases its faith on Wakunta, the supreme life force. Osage belief holds that the spirit of Wakunta is in every living thing, including animals, plants, the sky, and humans. The main divisions of life are separated between the sky and earth. the Osage creation story states that the people of the sky, Taisho, and the people of the earth, Hunka, united into one people, known as the Children of the Middle Waters. This group would be known as Neoka Shakan, now known as the Osage. If you've seen the Martin Scorsese film, Killers of the Flower Moon, some of this will sound familiar. Moving farther along the trail, deeper into the American Southwest, there are numerous different nations that have been in the area for varying times. For example, the Mogollon and the ancestral Pueblo peoples and cultures are expected by archaeologists to have been around since the 12th century BC. The ancestral Puebloans loom especially large in the cultural and image of the American Southwest. They are the creators of many of the iconic cliff-sided structures and pueblos that appear throughout modern-day states like Colorado and New Mexico. Over time, more tribes began to settle in the American Southwest, such as the Apache Nation, the Comanche Nation, and the largest federally recognized tribe in the United States, the Navajo Nation. The Pueblo peoples, a large grouping of tribes with similar religious and agricultural practices, is still incredibly influential on the region, with various tribes such as the Taos, Zunis, Hopis, and more. John Gregory Bork, a United States military man and prolific writer in the early 1800s, went on a journey, upon which he started in Santa Fe, New Mexico, and visited the villages of the Moqui Indians in Arizona. This three-month journey saw Bork encounter and interact with various Pueblos tribes and people. Bork had a specific interest in the religious ceremonies and customs of the indigenous people, stating that the reason he took the journey was to view the famous snake dance of the Moqui people. In his account, Bork described the ritual.
The 2nd Division reemerged from under the arcade, marching two and two as before. But in this section of the program, the left-hand files carried snakes in their hands and mouths. The first five or six of them held in their hands, with the heads of the reptiles to the right. As the procession pranced closer and closer to where we were seated, we saw that the dancers farther to the rear of the column were holding the slimy, wriggling serpents between their teeth.
Bork later goes on to call the ceremony astonishing and unlike anything he had witnessed before. The Spanish Empire's colonial project was inextricably connected with Roman Catholicism. For many of the Spaniards who pillaged the native communities, they saw themselves as soldiers of God, who were destined to turn the inhuman natives into Catholics. When Mexico achieved its independence in 1821, paving the way for the opening of Santa Fe Trail, it remained a deeply Catholic state. In fact, one of the most well-known and important figures in the push for independence was Miguel Hidalgo, a Roman Catholic priest. As Mexico attempted to assert control over the Southwest, they continued Catholic missionary efforts. They built churches and sent priests into native communities. This evangelization sowed the seeds of future tensions, as Catholic Mexicans believed it was necessary to convert the indigenous to Catholicism. Once the Santa Fe Trail kicked off, first a trickle and then a stream of American merchants and settlers poured into the region. These predominantly Christian settlers, mainly Protestant, added another layer of complexity to the trails. As the trail became more than just a commercial route and into a pathway for people choosing to migrate, they brought with them their ideas and values. For example, Henry Reed arrived in Santa Fe, New Mexico in the summer of 1846. He opened a school where his Baptist faith was prominent and tried to convert New Mexicans to Protestantism. After visiting a Catholic service in the neighboring town, he criticized the Mass for being not above a whisper and in Latin. Reed partnered with Reverend L. Smith and founded the first Protestant church in New Mexico, in 1853. The building was designed as an adobe brick building in an effort to persuade the indigenous and New Mexicans that Protestantism could work in the Southwest. The church offered services in Spanish as well to gain more traction in the area. Not all of the newcomers were Christian. A number of Ashkenazi Jewish people also went along the trail. These recent arrivals to America were attracted to the prospect of riches and land that the trail opened up. Solomon Jacob Spiegelberg, a Jewish man, moved to Santa Fe in 1844 under the support of a sponsor. By 1854, he had a dedicated crew for trading, a number of holdings and companies, including a bank, a mining company, and a trading post that dealt with primarily Native people. His family would go on to help establish Freemasonry in Santa Fe. The story is not unique. Jewish people such as Moses Goldstein, Abraham F. Abraham, Solomon Spiegelberg, Abraham Waters, and Moses Sampson all operated and owned their own trading outposts in the Santa Fe Trail launch pad of Independence, Missouri. The Spanish colonization of the Southwest and the opening of the Santa Fe Trail dramatically changed the religious makeup, creating a space that had people from vastly differing faiths, all trying to exist and practice their faith fully in this contested landscape. Tensions between the differing religions in the Southwest did not start with the Santa Fe Trail. It is essential to recognize that the Spanish Empire had taken many actions to promote Catholicism. Franciscan missionaries arrived in New Spain in 1523 and worked at establishing missions all across the Mexican territory. They built monasteries which also acted as educational hubs for Native children to be taught the Spanish language and Catholicism. Fundamental differences between the Anglo settlers and indigenous nations would lead to all-out battles and violence, especially following the Mexican-American War. The result of this war saw America expand its territory into the American Southwest. Increased number of settlers looking for land created direct conflict with Native communities already occupying the territory. Additionally, the development of the railroad and homesteading made it more accessible and safer for settlers to cross the continent. Meanwhile, the construction of the railway into the Southwest divided the land, destroying the nature at the same time. This two-pronged reality continued to diminish Native land holdings, eventually setting the stage for all-out war. While not all the wars fought between Natives and Americans were directly over religion, the Eurocentric ideas about religion were an essential component. Like the Spanish before them, Americans used their religious convictions to justify dehumanizing Native peoples. They argued that without the blessings of Christian civilization, they were not wise enough to deserve their land or to even be considered human. In the decades following the U.S.-Mexico War, United States troops and some of their allies came into armed conflict with the powerful Indian nations in the Southwest. One nation targeted by the Americans was the Navajo. In response to U.S. attacks, Navajo scouts raided American villages, capturing livestock and killing small numbers of people. In retaliation, Kit Carson, a famous American frontiersman, often held as a legend of the Santa Fe Trail, ordered a scorched earth policy, burning anything and everything to destroy the Navajo. Ultimately, the Navajo surrendered in 1864 and were forced to relocate. Enduring an 18-day, 300-mile trek through the New Mexican heat to be placed in their new reservation. One especially harrowing account describes the sheer depravity forced upon the Navajo during the long walk, the term the Navajo used to remember the struggle.
It was said that those ancestors were on the long walk with their daughter, who was pregnant and about to give birth. So my ancestors asked the army to hold up for a while and to let the woman give birth, but the soldiers wouldn't do it. They forced my people to move on, saying that they were getting behind the others. The soldier told their parents that they had to leave their daughter behind. Your daughter is not going to survive anyway. Not long after they had moved on, they had heard a gunshot from where they had been a short time ago.
These campaigns against the Navajo, the Apaches, and countless other Native peoples in the Southwest, and what historian Elliot West calls the Contested Plains, were part of a larger federal program known as the Reservation Policy. This involved forcing Native peoples onto small tracts of land, carved out by the government, where they would be confined and overseen by the United States government. Not only was the removal of indigenous communities from their land physically violent, but it was also spiritually violent. The natives had tied their faith and their ancestry to the land. To be removed from it was to be removed from their history, spirituality, and culture. In addition to opening up lands for white American settlers, the reservation policy was rooted in an assimilationist goal. The idea was now that the natives were conquered, it was time to turn them into Americans culturally and politically. This would require the eradication of traditional native ways of life and language. One of the central institutions that was used to assimilate the indigenous was Indian boarding schools. The first Native American boarding school began operations in 1860 when the Bureau of Indian Affairs created a boarding school in the Yakima Indian Reservation in Washington. Future schools would be both located on and off reservations. The Carlisle Indian School, created by Richard Henry Pratt, was the model for many boarding schools throughout the American West. Pratt, the headmaster, stated, quote, "A great general has said that the only good Indian is a dead one. In a sense, I agree with the sentiment, but only in this, that all the Indian there is in the race should be dead. Kill the Indian in him and save the man," end quote. Lessons aimed to make Native students marketable in American society. Male students were taught manual labor skills, and females were taught how to run a household. These lessons prepare them not to succeed as a middle or upper class person. It was specially designed to make them lower class and to serve white people. Other lessons include Eurocentric and Christian subjects, such as the importance of private property and capitalism, the celebration of American holidays, such as Columbus Day, and many lessons on Christian theology. Despite being in the assimilationist, supposedly nonviolent era of American Indian policy, the methods used would not be considered humane. For example, Native students were put in a placing out system, a program that sent students to white American communities. Oftentimes, these students were made to do unpaid domestic and physical labor, with the threat of violence hanging over them if they were not to cooperate. Certain reports state that inhuman punishment was commonplace, with the use of solitary confinement, forced starvation, and corporal beatings used to force assimilation. It went past physical measures. Native students were forced to watch movies such as Cowboys and Indians, which showcased the slaughter of indigenous nations. Students were not allowed to speak in their native tongue. The use of English was mandatory. Due to the poor medical and food conditions of the boarding camps and a lack of immunity, diseases such as the flu and tuberculosis rampaged through the students, oftentimes killing several. One particularly chilling case described how the Phoenix Indian School saw 325 cases of measles in 10 days, with 9 of the students dying within that period. Their families were not informed, only hearing after the burials. For many who passed away, they were left in an unmarked grave, with no way to honor their personal spirituality's tenets of death and burial. From 1860 to 1978, the federal government funded 357 boarding schools across 30 states, which held over 60,000 children. Around a third of these schools were operated by Christian organizations. The Christians, both religiously and racially paternalistic, viewed their actions as necessary to create civilized people. It is also essential to note that Native Americans did not take these changes lying down. Many Native communities tried to resist sending their children to boarding schools, but they would be faced with violence from the much more powerful state. Therefore, Indigenous nations needed to work inside the system to make gradual changes to the schools, such as changing curriculum to focus more on Native culture and community. Other groups sought to directly protest the Christian American movement by celebrating their faiths. While not directly situated in our geographic area, Great Plains Indigenous groups, such as the Lakota, started the Ghost Dance Revival movement. These public rituals sought to express their faith openly, while also hoping for the end of American westward expansion and freedom to Native groups. Tragically, the American government viewed the growing movement as a threat to their authority, and in the Wounded Knee Massacre, killed around 300 Lakota people. Today, the federal government still operates 7 federally funded boarding schools. Following the 1934 Indian Reorganization Act, more authority and control was given to Indigenous leaders, and the currently operating schools are more beacons of education in areas lacking more opportunities for Native students. Native students are more likely to be suspended from school, to be behind in subjects such as reading and math, more likely to die at homicide and suicide, and more likely to drop out of high school. These lingering effects should not be interpreted as Native students being less intelligent. It should be understood as the lasting impact of violent and malicious education that was imposed on Native peoples, and how the United States government still has a long way to go to remedy their actions. Despite the relentless and government-sponsored attacks on Indigenous faith, Native peoples have persevered. Spiritual practices are still an important part of Native life and are passed down to each new generation. Organizations have promoted the use of traditional Native tongues to keep their languages going. They have encouraged and pushed companies such as Apple to incorporate Native languages such as Osage, Chickasha, and more into the keyboard of Apple devices. Dictionaries and teaching materials have been created to help teach Native communities of their heritage and culture. Native groups are also working to perform traditional rituals and customs in public in more accessible ways as to help keep the culture living on. For example, a Navajo dance group called Dene Ta performed at the Library of Congress in 2007. A recording of the events will allow the Navajo customs to live on and have a better chance at survival and commemoration. While far too late, more government leaders are beginning to acknowledge this dark history. This is especially true of government complicity in boarding schools. Canada has recently gone through a political crisis in the past few years as they try to reel with the legacy of these tragic schools and the violence they wrought. What started as a spiritual highway led to a period of excessive violence in which Christians, under the pretense of anglicizing and proselytizing, tried to force the destruction of the Native ways of life. Despite losing so much, Natives never accepted defeat, and their culture lives on to this day. The deep religious intermixing that the Santa Fe Trail caused has still continued to affect the American Southwest even today, as people of all faiths continue to interact and live in these conflicted religious spaces. This episode of Wheels Across the West was written and narrated by me, Bobby Lee. Our producer and engineer is Kyle Jackson, and our executive producer is Jay Sexton, director of the Kinder Institute at the University of Missouri. This podcast is recorded at KBIA Studios in Columbia, Missouri, and distributed in partnership with the Missouri Humanities Council. I'm fine and dandy. Never been better. I've never been worse. I've been up, I've been down, I've been lost, I've been found. I am so gosh darn.